back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Deion's wearing the jacket, man. I just want to say this. Alan, I'm going to get to you in a minute. Today has been one of the great days of radio ever when you consider the topicality. County Executive Johnny O walked. Did you just script that?
No. He was in Catonsville visiting some businesses, and my brother was with him, and he said, "Hey, where are you guys recording today?" And that was all I knew. And he had a little time, and he walked in to say hello to the owners.
So Johnny O comes in and starts interviewing Jane Miller
right.
in the middle of the show.
Right.
And then Rob Robin walks in, and Jane doesn't know Rob's here. And Rob, then everybody's crying, and they're over here hugging each other. Then I invited Alan out that you didn't know that I invited Alan
right.
out because I knew we had a little window at the end. And I thought, like, I love Alan. We don't get together enough. And there's baseball to talk about. There was this big bad lockout that's over now. Since we started, I had a margarita and baseball's over. Who knew?
That's
right?
Basically what happened.
Come to Catonsville and it all ends. So I invited Alan out, and then you invited Damien, and Damien invited Ian, and the next thing you know, the baseball strike's over. So our lockout. I keep calling it a strike, and Luke wants to kill me when I call
it's
it a strike.
A lockout.
Right. So
it was a lockout.
This is straight out of the WNST newsroom, right? Alan, who has covered the
Orioles
since 1995. Alan, you walked in here, and there was a lockout, and you've been sitting here about an hour and a half, and literally, I'm sure Luke's blowing me up right now, so I don't even know where the hell my phone is.
We're going
to steal my phone. I got Betty Boop tickets. By the way, it's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. I've been giving Betty Boop tickets. I'm running out of Betty Boop tickets. Roz, send Betty Boop tickets. By the way, do you remember Greg from Northeast, one of our listeners, Greg? If you do, that's Roz.
So.
Roz's husband.
All right.
So, yeah, so we have a whole Maryland Lottery connection, and we're going to have Roz and Greg come out and have a crab cake with us soon. So Alan has been my baseball insider, aficionado all these years, and Alan yells at me literally as if we were sitting down to do Rob Roblin, I think. You said to me, so what time did this happen? 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock on Thursday?
Probably 2:15 or
I was driving here listening to the MLB Network on XM. And they were talking about the deadline being 3 o'clock, and they were taking the vote. And they kept getting, like, moment-to-moment updates. It's not looking good. It's not looking good. The union's not going to do it. We'll see what happens with the players.
Did they push through this international draft thing? Like,
I don't know all the specifics
yet. Okay, got it.
But you did have a scoop that the executive committee evidently voted to not accept, and the players overruled them.
This happened, like, 3:04 p.m., per John Heyman of Twitter. On Twitter, Union Executive Board was 8-0 against the MLB proposal, but teams voted 26-4 in favor, carrying the day.
So the players caved like biatches.
I think the players said enough already.
Enough. I think they, yes, that's what I think.
Look, I have not been in the room, I haven't done it, but the word has been, a lot of the sort of side word has been that a lot of the people on the union board are Scott Boras clients, and that there was a feeling in various circles that Boras had a little too much say in this, which didn't necessarily, certainly didn't benefit the owners, didn't benefit all the players, benefited Scott Boras.
But Boras was doing the negotiating for everyone, which is probably not a bad guy to have out in front. Honestly,
sure.
If I'm a player, let Boras go fight with these guys.
But
he's not starving. He doesn't have a mortgage to pay next month as a minor
correct.
League player. Right?
And I also
correct.
Think that a lot of people.
And then this is your friend Frank down the street.
Well,
his boys are.
I'm not going to use any names, but I think players. Now, I was talking
players
to Alan.
Players making $700,000?
Right. Players with 3 or 4 years in the league have a very different economic interest in this agreement than does Max Scherzer.
Absolutely.
Than does Bryce Harper. I mean, there are different levels here. And quite honestly, I mean, Alan React, there are more guys in the 3 to 4 year.
Oh.
There's more guys
right.
who wanted to play
right.
baseball right now that didn't want to play.
Right.
And the owners bet on that all along. And the owners bet that this is not Steve Garvey and Mark Belanger and
absolutely.
Andy Messersmith pissed
right.
off about Curt Flood and Steve Carlton. That this isn't that era. This is a bunch of guys living off the fat of what they fought off of.
Look,
period,
the reality is that the vast majority of guys that get to play professional baseball are not going to walk away millionaires,
correct.
Right? But there is a living for some of them if you know how to navigate it. And even if you only play 3 or 4 years, which is more the average than anything else.
And you probably weren't a great player at that point. You were just a player.
Correct.
You should walk away from this game with $5-10 million, right? Literally.
At the least $2 million.
Right.
$2.5 million. If you lose the opportunity to make that money, what do you walk away right. with? And then I think the vast majority of players are hearing the fans say, screw this. I've had enough. I'm done. And as a lot of people said, this is certainly not original to me. This is very different from 1994, where you had three major networks and you had some cable, and you go out and walk
into
the world.
It was also the centerpiece of American life in 1994, and it's the centerpiece of Mueller's life. It's not the centerpiece of my life anymore, and you and I have talked, it's not the centerpiece of your
it's
life
not.
Anymore. And it was very much so.
Absolutely.
At that time.
Look, Don and I were just talking off air about movies, and I'm telling them I'm setting up a home theater experience so that I can decide whether or not I want to go to the movies or not, because I can do it at home. And if I want to, I can do a million things online. We just talked about Meriwether. Some of the greatest nights of my life were at Meriwether Post Pavilion. Sting in 1987. Death Cab for Cutie 7 years ago. Whitney Houston, Mr., the first concert ever. There are a million things to do out there now. And other variations of sports, if that's your thing. You've got legal betting out there, gambling. A lot of people are going to walk away from baseball and be fine. Look, I love baseball. I always love baseball. The game's there. I'm going to watch it. I'm not. We had this conversation. Who's going to watch San Diego and Pittsburgh in August 15th on a network broadcast? The answer is me. But if they go for two more months and not play at this point in my life with many other things going on, I'm not going to go to bed crying. In 1994, the last day before the strike, I was in Camden Yards.
You couldn't stop talking about it. You were obsessed with it.
I remember walking through Camden Yards and being just miserable that I knew this was going to come to an end. And the first 3 weeks of the strike, I didn't know what to do with myself. And I'm not telling – I have followed what's going on, but there hasn't been one tear.
Well, I was worried how I was going to feed my family at that point. I had a 10-year-old son. There were no Ravens here, right? I mean, Don, you knew me then, you know?
Sure.
And I remember when George Acton and John Dow over at Budweiser said, kid, George Acton, Kim, I love you. George, kid, they're going to play ball. Trust me, there's too much money. They're going to play ball, you know? But he said that in August, and then there was September and October,
yeah.
November. And then Joe Smith came to town, and I flew out to see meet Julio out in Oakland, and Joe Smith's hitting his head, and
sure.
It's March, and they're still not playing. And the next thing you know, I'm down in Sarasota, and Kevin Brown I remember him strengthening his arm there, trying not to get hurt and make his money. And they played baseball, but we were one of the places where Cal Ripken, you know, we were about to win Davey Johnson and all
right.
that. I just met you, and we had all these feelings about Camden Yards. Man, this is a whole different place. So now they're going to play. Okay, so they're going to play.
They're going to play.
What does that mean for you, Don? I mean, I literally want to ask you because you are going to give the Orioles money now. I'll tell you, this morning I got an email because I've bought tickets everywhere, right? I mean, I went to 30 ballparks. I'm on everybody's lists. I have bought group tickets in the last – since Jen had cancer, the last 5 years, 6 years, I bought group tickets. I bought 250 tickets in Pittsburgh for a Pirates game coming back from the Ray Lewis induction, okay? And I on that same trip, I bought 250 Indians tickets for that Friday night game against the Angels because we stayed in Cleveland. So I'm on both their lists. They're emailing me this morning in their group sales asking me if I want to buy tickets. And I'm thinking to myself, you don't even have a sport. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
literally.
Right.
Like, I mean, nice Chelsea, nice girl from the Pittsburgh Pirates emailed me this morning.
Sure.
And I'm like, Chelsea Rizzo, Chelsea Beautiful, right? Pittsburgh. I'm not buying Pirates tickets. But they're emailing, and I'm thinking, what are you doing if you're Chelsea and work for the Pirates to sell a ticket before this? Now that's over, you're going to get a call from your Oriole team
sure.
representative tomorrow and all of that. Now you have the optimism of, how many games are we going to lose? How much money am I going to spend? Where am I going to park? When do the Yankees come to town? All that's real now
yeah,
in the last hour for you.
Well, as I've said to you before, you don't ever quite accurately capture my affinity for the game. Alan and I love movies. I love baseball. I like football. I like high school sports. So as I've said to you many times, unsuccessfully, because you don't seem to comprehend what I'm saying on it, is that
if I have one more,
is
just
that,
one more,
is that
WAPO here.
Is that baseball for me is
leisure.
An entertainment, leisure activity. So I'm like, I don't, as some people, for example, given that I can follow it on my phone, I don't typically sit throughout the season and watch 3 hours and 20 minutes uninterrupted. I'll do something else. I'll read. I'll watch some, but I'll keep an eye on it. And
I'm not
going
to take a cheap shot at Garceau or any
I'll
broadcasters
watch in
right
30
now.
Or
but the baseball
40.
Is bad enough. I mean, it's hard to watch.
Well, you and
lose.
I totally, yeah.
But it's hard to watch when
but
you
let's
lose.
Not,
this watch. You really
let's
is.
Not you and I just have a very different take on the broadcast, particularly Kevin Brown.
The young guys are pretty good.
That's what I've said.
I don't have an opinion about Kevin.
That's what I've said to Nestor.
I don't have an opinion.
I think actually that not. I think Kevin Brown actually, Alan, is potentially better than pretty good. I think if you listen across the country, I think there's an opportunity for him to become something really quite special. He does his homework.
Yes.
He has a great voice, and he likes the game. That's
if he likes the
pretty
game.
Good combination.
If you ask me, do I miss John Miller, Joe Angel?
Sure.
Of course. But I've heard a lot of the broadcasts across the country.
That's what I say.
And there are a lot of subpar and mediocre people out there. And to lose the people we had, and bring in the people that are routinely doing it, we're really lucky.
Oh, no. Kevin, I agree. Kevin Arnold, Kevin Brown. Greg Arnold, Kevin Brown. Those guys are very, very good. Now,
I wish you were on the radio more.
Yes,
less on TV, more radio. But
I think it's I like the old mix where you took turns. Yeah.
You're a radio listener more than a TV viewer, or no? You're just in the car.
I'm in the car a lot, so I listen in live. And then I watch.
I mean, honest to God, in the last 20 years, I'm not being mean, and it's not even about baseball. Like, I don't listen to a lot on the radio, and I haven't. It's just, I'm not in the car at 7 o'clock
at
night. You know, I'm just not, you know.
I'm in the car or working, so live, I'm listening on the radio, listening on the app, and I'm following it pitch by pitch.
Man,
on
everybody
the
gets it a different way.
I get really, home, I watch the
listen,
game.
I'm really eager. You ask me what it means for me. I cannot, and you know, I hate the business side of it. I don't study it. I don't dig into it.
But that's my job, so I do that.
I understand. I just don't like it. But I am interested, and I can't wait. I want to see what happened with service time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see what happened with the international draft. I want to see what happens with the college draft, the baseball draft. So there are things that I care about. I'm excited. I want to see. I'm ready to. For example, I thought recently on another sports station in town, they did something very interesting in the afternoon. I thought one day, I thought it was an interesting take. They were taking big picture. In the next 3 to 5 years, are you more bullish on the Orioles being successful or the Ravens being successful? And I thought, well, that's an interesting.
It is an interesting question.
Interesting question, given where both franchises are and the holes that the Ravens have to fill. And then they took it to where they tried to take comparable players in their career status and ask listeners whether they were more bullish on the Oriole or the Raven. And one of the examples was the one when I was in the car, and I thought it was a really good comparison in terms of trying to compare two different sports. Are you more bullish that 3 years from now, Austin Hayes will be an impact player or Hollywood Brown?
Hmm.
Now, that's a really pretty interesting question, right? Because they're both probably at pretty similar points in their career. So I'm interested. You know, I'm very bullish on Mike Elias and Sid Medall and what they've done. I think the pipeline is there, but I always subscribe to, what was it, that old, you're great at quotes and stuff. But whatever Yogi said once upon a time, you know, you could be young and something, and all that means is in a couple of years you could be old and still not talented. Something along, you know, so prospects are just that.
Yes.
I mean, listen, I remember the night Matt Wieters made his debut, and I can tell you where I was and where I was.
I was in left field bleachers.
I was so excited. And I'm not going to diminish Matt Wieters, but he was never what we hoped he would be. He was a solid.
Yeah, neither was Jeffrey Hammond.
He was a solid major league player.
He was a great broadcaster.
He wasn't great.
Matt
right?
Wieters is a much better defensive catcher
right.
than he was an offensive catcher. And I said it to Nestor on the air. You know, the only 3 or 4 years into his career, the only person that was overestimating Matt Wieters at that point was Buck.
Right,
because you
correct.
Kept putting him in the middle of the lineup.
Correct.
Like, that's not what he is, so stop putting
correct.
Him there.
So my question to you, Alan, And I think it's a fair one. And you asked me what I like about baseball. If 4 years from now, Adley Rutschman's production is Matt Wieters like, I chalk that up as a disappointment.
It has to be. He's a 1-1.
I don't think anyone sees him.
When you're a 1-1, you either got to go to the Hall of Fame. I mean, B.J. Surhoff was a disappointment as a 1-1, and he played 18. I mean, no disrespect.
No, he's a great player.
But he was a very good
right.
He wasn't a great player.
So
right.
My question is,
he was a great guy to have on your team.
If you tell me that 4 years from now, Grayson Rodriguez and D.L. Hall will have spent minimal time on the DL, then I think there's every reason to believe that the Orioles can be very, very good. I mean, but it's all ifs. There's ifs and buts and candies and nuts, right?
Look, let me first say this. I like the way Elias and Seidel are building this team. I've for the last 15 years, I've been of the opinion that it made no sense to me to try to build a farm system around pitching, because pitching will
correct.
Fail more than any other thing
every time.
In sports. I have always believed that you get as many offensive prospects as
right.
you can get. Yes, you have to draft pitching, but you can trade. If you have a surplus of offense, you can trade that for the one or two quality pitchers that you need to round out.
And remember,
your
past
staff.
Philosophy, Alan, was grow the arms by the bats, right? And I'm with you. I thought that was backwards.
I thought it was absolutely backwards. I would not have drafted Adley Rutschman first because catcher is way too dangerous a position.
Right.
If all it takes is one guy sliding into right. him against the Buster Posey rule, he breaks a leg, he's never the same guy. That can happen in any other position, but there's nothing like catcher in baseball for that to be.
Well, there's nothing like being a 1-1 to raise your expectations that if you're B.J. Surhoff or if you're Matt Wieters, it's not good enough. Matt Wieters made a lot of money. He was a good player. He was our first pick. He's the first pick overall.
Should still be playing. I don't understand why he doesn't have a job anymore. But anyway.
But Rutschman probably will only catch 125 games, right?
I have to believe that.
I believe that's what I think.
Particularly now that there is going to be a DH
correct.
Across baseball and you have the opportunity to do that. Look, I think they're taking the team in the right direction. What has happened in the last few years has been awful, and I've listened to a lot of this talk about, you know, teams tanking, and obviously, it is tough to watch this team. But the perspective that I've looked at is, this team is playing in the American League East with the Yankees and the Red Sox, which are the bullies of baseball in terms of spending money. The Tampa Bay Rays, who have figured out how to do it better than anybody
yeah,
else.
It's
and
go into that lab and figure it out, right?
So you've got that. Everything changed when they decided to do the unbalanced schedule. I think we're 20 years into that now. So now you're getting crushed by those teams over and over and over again. And just for kicks and giggles, they brought the Nats in from Montreal and took all of the money out of Baltimore that was coming from D.C. and Virginia, pouring into Camden Yards, and put it in D.C. So if you're the Orioles and you're trying to rebuild an organization that has been poorly run, mismanaged, no question about that, but you're trying to find, you need to rebuild a base to start from, how do you do that? And I think that they have done the only thing they could. Now, this is largely about what all of this has been for the Union, teams tanking, and each team has its own individual situation. But I think the Orioles are in a pretty unique situation. And the one thing that they did to try to make it plausible for the Orioles to succeed financially in terms of Masson, they've spent the last decade arguing about in courts. So how do you get, if you're the Orioles, into a position that makes you viable for the long term? And I don't see how they had any other choice. Do I think the Orioles have a bright future? I think they have a chance for a bright future because, yes, they have good prospects.
They have a chance.
But they're just prospects.
Right, I agree.
But timing has to be everything. The thing that Baltimore fans won't like is that they have to treat this a lot like Tampa Bay in the sense that you can't fall in love with your players
right.
if you're the general manager. When it's time to move them, they got to go. And people in Baltimore will not like that.
Biggest mistake of the previous regime. And
holding on to people that they thought the fans loved.
Zach Britton and Manny. Had they traded, they both should have been moved the year before. And the part that I never understood about that, Alan, as I said, what I never understood is why the brain trust wouldn't go into room and let's take Manny. take the simple question at the time. Come this time next year, are we going to be in a position to pay Manny $30 million a year for 5 or 6 years, and are we willing to do that? If the answer is yes,
right,
then we still go. But the answer to that question in the Oriole brain trust would have been no. So they should have moved him.
And also re-signing Chris Davis
yes.
to the contract.
Well, that was the biggest mistake.
But I think the answer to the question is that if you're Duquette and Buck, you know that this is going to come to an end once all these players are gone. And I think that they decided to hold on to guys to take one or two more shots at this whole thing, knowing that Duquette wasn't going to be back.
Right, and it was over.
And it was going to be over.
And knowing Machado wasn't going to sign.
Correct.
And knowing that they were sunk deep by what the old man did with Davis.
And they had and not signing international players and not...
Well, the other part was Gonzalez
having
and
no
Wayne
analytics
Shannon
department.
Letting those guys leave, too, and not really having...
Well, but they were guys that were going to do what they did in the time frame they did it. Chen and Gonzalez were great for 2 or 3 years. Tillman, same way, right?
Yeah, right.
They caught lightning in a bottle, finding guys that were base. Tillman, I still believe he sold his soul to the devil to get the 5 years that he had in Baltimore. But Gonzalez and Chen were serviceable number three, number four pitchers on a lot of teams. The Orioles played great defense, hit a lot of home runs.
And those guys gave six innings.
And they had Brock O'Day in
Correct.
Britain.
And correct.
That was what you needed. And the formula made sense, but it was not sustainable. And I think as opposed to doing the thing that was smart and bringing back a Hall of Players, they're like, this is going to end.
Well, the more they won, the worse they drafted, too, because they drafted later, and there was no pipeline for any of these 20-something picks that they were getting.
And Nelson
so
Cruz
now they've
and Nick,
stacked up these 1-1s and 1-3s and 1-4s.
And not re-signing Nick Markakis and Nelson Cruz essentially ended what could have been a nice run after 2014.
The Cruz thing is outrageous. They just made a lot of baseball mistakes back, and your point, Nestor, to think, and it's why I am so encouraged by the current rankings, whether it's Baseball America or whatever, FanGraphs, you pick it, that we could have been so bad for so long and not have stockpiled and become a better. For that fact that we drafted so poorly year in and year out is a real indictment.
The real indictment is on Major League Baseball on a day when they end this, in that the slotting and the money and the fact that there were a bunch of teams. Angelos, when he was sane, lucid, awake, running the place with an iron fist, hated Boros, hated, he wasn't ever going to draft one of the great players. Right. They were always going to draft the next tier down. And, you know, Mike Flanagan, many, many times during his life, and when he was running the team, that's something that drove him nuts.
Well,
drafting Wieters got him fired. You know that.
Don't
look at the date he got fired. He got fired 2 days after Wieters was drafted because they forbid him from drafting Wieters, and he did it anyway. The old man didn't want him drafting Wieters because Wieters was going to hold him up for money.
That may shed some light
go
on.
Go look at any of the drafts. Wieters is the only guy in all that time
where they had
top 10 picks.
So if you're Duquette and Showalter, and you know that you can't even draft it, you take your shot because you're not going to have
and which they did. I mean, you think about Mike, and Mike was a close friend of yours, Nestor. I always think that the stain, and I know it tormented him until the day he left this earth. The drafting of Matt Hobsgood, I mean, to this day, I mean, to draft a guy that nobody even thought was a top 15 or 20 pick, and again, it may have been dictated on high for economics, but that's how you remain lousy. And now we appear to, including the international sign. I mean, it is outrageous when you think about what Alan said, that you had a major league team, although I'll give you a Marvin Lewis example because you love Marvin. But the fact that we could not have had an analytics department or an international scouting department.
Well, you're waiting for Marvin Lewis for the Bengals to having scouts?
When Marvin Lewis showed up with Cincinnati and they had no scouts. And Marvin was like, "What? Wait a minute. There are no scouts.
This is 2005. Right. Like, what are you doing?"
They didn't have a weight room in spring training.
Right.
We literally...
They were working out in a high school gym.
Or in a tent over on the side.
No, it was a tent with weights that were Charles Atlas was pushing.
I mean, that's why when you ask
they didn't
me...
didn't have a Nautilus machine.
If I'm bullish, but to finish this part up is... that I feel pretty blessed that I have young, you know, kids that, that love to go. They still love baseball. And to me, it's like it's the joy that you get when you talk about concerts, that on a beautiful 75-degree night with a Boog's sandwich in one hand and a cold beer in the other and the umpire playing let's play ball and good baseball. You know, I want to say
now,
that doesn't diminish, and we haven't really asked Alan his opinion. I think the game, Nestor and I have talked a lot about it, I think the game has problems. I really dislike the trend towards starting pitchers going four or five
That's
innings.
Ridiculous.
And five and six and seven relievers, and the game's taking 3 hours and 20 minutes. Assuming they banned the shift, I'm happy with that because the shift – and I hear the people saying, oh, you should be able to adjust and hit the ball the other way. I guess you could say that. Bottom line is – give me two fielders on each side of the infield.
Let's make an engaging game. Yeah.
Maybe
let's
we'll play a little game. Small ball again. You know,
baseball has been – he's older than, you know, than any of us. Slow to change on all this. I mean,
right.
It took him 50 years. 50 years to get to DH in the National League. 50 years.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm going to be 50 in July, okay? And I can tell you from the moment I met you to now, life perspective has changed dramatically. Baseball has been slow to change. I think you adapt or die in life, in sports, in business. I get that. I think there's some things that need to be considered. See, I hate the shift, but I hate that they have to artificially change the shift to get the game.
A lot of
change.
My friends are where you are, right?
Because I listen to these pull hitters are hitting 213, and if they actually thought about the other opposite field, right. I thought
they would be a better major league player, and the game would be better played.
I was fully of the belief that in 15 years you're going to have a great bunch of hitters because they will have to learn how to use the whole field.
Ted Williams would not have had trouble hitting against the shift.
Tony Gwynn would not have had trouble hitting against
Tony Gwynn.
He lived off that hole. Right.
Hey, Tony Gwynn would hit 460 if he shifted. Right.
Michael Brantley has no trouble hitting against the shift because he's a great hitter. So, I mean, the shift would have evolved the game into having a generation of fantastic hitters. But And
everybody would have had to be Rod Carew to exist.
And then it would have made the counts go faster because guys would have swung the bat. It would have made the game speed up because people wouldn't have walked as
starting
much.
Pitchers wouldn't have
starting
to labor as far.
Starting pitchers would have to be more accurate. So taking away the shift sort of lets the game off of its responsibility to be better, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
But look, I'm always going to love the game. But yeah, it's harder to watch the analytic version of baseball.
I agree.
So I mean, I hope that they, now that they have an agreed upon path, can work together to find a lovely balance between history and future approaches to the game. Because you have to go forward. But you know what annoys me about the analytics guys is that they talk about the game. Like, this was a secret element game. Like, well, maybe, but you've changed the game to fit what you want your statistic to be. People talk about, wins don't matter.
RBIs. I love the guys who want to argue RBIs don't matter. But,
wins don't matter because you have diminished the value of the starting pitcher.
Heard Sid McDonald talked. I went and heard Sid one night. Somebody invited me to some group he was speaking to, and he was a very engaging guy. But I actually asked him that question. I said, Sid, I've read this, and I need you to clarify. RBIs don't matter, and he gave a pretty good analytical defense about why it's not the most important stat. And I'm going, whew, man, I'm missing something here in the modern game.
There is truth in all of it, but to tell me that a Jack Morris, whose ERA, when you look at it, wasn't 2.9 for his career, but pitched a ton of innings, probably on a third of his outings, probably an inning two longer than he should have to keep his stats brilliant so that he could make his team, so that his team could save the bullpen. They had a good enough lead.
That's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Wins matter when you do that. When you pitch five innings and you give up three or four runs, but you're ahead by two and the team preserves it, then yeah.
Then you're Miguel Gonzalez.
It doesn't matter
you're
quite
not Jack
as much.
Morris.
So, I mean, it's... how
I think it drives Palmer absolutely insane, right?
How you filter your perspective. And then playoffs, right?
Right.
The last 5 years, and I guess maybe some of this started with Buck when he didn't bring in
Britton. Oh, I think he changed the game when he didn't bring in Britton.
But you know, you pull these guys, so you keep throwing these relievers out over and over and over again, and then eventually their arms fall off,
Alan,
right?
San Francisco, I know, because you follow it, this past year, I can remember texting my son, brought the closer in the second inning. They just brought the closer in the second inning.
So what you see in a lot of places, you have your fourth starter who's on the roster, but they don't pitch him in the playoffs because he's not good enough, and they're wearing out guys' arms, and then you get to the point probably in the second round, if you make it, that you got to throw him, but he hasn't pitched in 16 days. So how can you expect him to be any good when he hasn't gotten any? Sometimes you got to dance with the date that brings
you. I agree.
And I think teams in the playoffs, it has become throw your – the Washington Nationals won the most improbable World Series I've ever seen. They won with Scherzer, and they had three starters and like two relievers.
Gonzalez, Scherzer, and I'm losing the other.
No, it wasn't you. It was.
Go ahead, move on.
The point is, they won with five guys. They destroyed their arms in the process.
Lackey? No.
But they won with basically five pitchers, and I mean that had. I don't think that's ever happened in the history of the game. And that is the best version of a crazy approach to winning in the playoffs. But it's almost impossible
to do. Alan McCallum is here. We're at El Guapo. I'm only one margarita deep here for being our guest and playing the game. Alan's going to get some Betty Boop tickets from courtesy of the Maryland Lottery. I'm getting a whole bunch of these away today. We're having some fun down here in Catonsville. Been a day, right? I mean, we started. Woo! There was no baseball. Nobody's happier than Moeller.
I am, baby.
Look at him, man.
Is that you pushing the button to give Angelos money? I'm going to the MLB app. Take me out to the crowd. No, buy me some.
It could be worse. You might sing the Matt St. Joe fight song.
I need to tell you something. You had Jill Eisenberg on the show few days ago. Jill and I went to high school.
All right, Jill's
graduated from this. She is the salt of the earth. She has been that every day of her life, and you should absolutely support the MS charities. And follow her because she is a person that will lead you to a good place.
There we go. Well, she came down and led me to a good place last week, and we gave away some winning lottery tickets last week at Mama's on the Half Show. Maybe we've done the same thing here today. We're at El Guapo. We're in Catonsville enjoying drinks. We had a delicious crab cake that we served here.
Unbelievable nachos.
I had a crab cake and had a margarita with Rob Roblin today.
And nachos and guac. And
I got myself a beef sandwich and fries that I'm going to enjoy.
There you go.
Oh, you got some food?
You got some food. I absolutely have some food.
Nestor, it's always fun to sit with what I told you over the years, the number one baseball analyst in the state of Maryland.
Loves you. Hey, give a plug, both of you, for Owings Mills and the
Hubert V. Simmons, Negro League
Baseball. I was just there.
Let's talk about this.
It's an amazing place that is growing, and it's a place that everyone should go see. It's in the Owings Mills Library.
Several floors.
Absolutely, and the plans are for expansion. And you should, if you haven't seen it, you should go.
It is an exhibit, is it not, Alan? I tell people, it's not hyperbole. I am not exaggerating. It is worthy of something that you would see at Cooperstown. It is that.
It's a piece of Cooperstown here. It really is.
It's magnificent and
absolutely
run by the greatest people. I mean, Mr. Eugene Banks and Mrs. Simmons. They just don't come any better. Get to the Metro Center in Owings Mills. Go.
If you love baseball, I know a lot of people love baseball.
Well,
you'll
just love walking floor to floor and taking in some really important history of African American baseball. It's wonderful. What a great way to end this.
It's elite,
thing.
Is what you would say, right?
Elite.
All right, Alan, you still have the hats? Where's your Negro League hats, man? Don't you have the? Didn't I bring you? I brought you.
You
coasters.
You want me to wear them all today?
I brought you coasters.
How many do you think
I brought you coasters?
My head is big. It's not quite that big.
I brought you some coasters for the hall.
They are on my...
Have you been to Kansas City yet?
I went 10 years ago when I
you did
for
go.
My 40th birthday.
And Max Weiss, as we sign off, my man says it's Belfast.
Belfast.
Walking away with Best Picture.
No, I haven't seen West Side Story, and I haven't seen Licorice Pizza yet. West Side Story is coming. My surround sound comes in tomorrow. I'm waiting to watch it with that.
Turn the lights off. Give yourself a theater experience. When Rita Moreno sings somewhere, That's all. Enough said.
But I've seen
drop the mic.
I've seen 8 of the 10, and of the 8 right now, I would say Belfast is the movie that will win. Is it the best picture? That's another discussion, but I think it's the front runner.
I should have him more for the Oscars, too.
But we should have he and Max on together.
Ooh!
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right, there you go.
Max Allen, and there we go.
I'm working with iconoclasts here, you know, real Renaissance men. Baseball and movies. Perfect.
I'm in.
There you go.
There you go. Don Moeller, Alan McCallum, we're here at El Guapo. Big thanks to our friends at Goodwill Industries for also sponsoring us, as well as the Maryland Lottery. And we're going to be letting ourselves play at Costas next Friday, the 18th. Come on out to Dundalk. We'll be there from 2 until 5. And then on the 23rd, Don will be with me again at Fadley's in Lexington Market with Amy, who's been texting me today. I had a long segment today with Jack Brooks from Jam Clayton talking about this H-2B visa problem, this six-month issue, and why our crab cakes were so expensive last year and why crab was $55 a pound, so go check that out. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570, signing off from El Guapo. I'm headed to the bar. We are AM 1570, Baltimore Positive.